Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, the Legacy and Faith Show featuring estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant. Hello, Mr. Grant, once again.
Yes, back at it.
Back at it. Interesting discussion this week. We started a discussion last week about what's called the Special Needs Trust or the Supplemental Needs Trust. And this is for family members, people we care about, who are going to need some assistance beyond what the government can do.
Yeah, and not only just beyond the government, but actually one of the goals in setting up a special needs trust is that we actually want the individual to maintain their government assistance,
right,
whether that's a federal assistance program or whether that's a state assistance program, is that we want to make sure we leave money in a proper way, in the right way, so that we don't have to disinherit a child and rely on
but a lot of people,
family.
A lot of people do that, though.
Yep.
They're thinking it's a way to solve this problem.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And it actually has unwary traps. We discussed that last week a little bit. And so you can always go back to our website, legacyandfaith.com, grab our podcast right there. But a special needs trust is specifically designed so that we can care for somebody long term that we know is going to need assistance, and specifically assistance from the government entities. They for some reason, they're unable to function at a high level that will allow them to maintain their own standard of care. And so that could be something from whether it was a workplace accident, a car accident, or whether it's someone who was born with their disability. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, out of individuals in the U.S. right now, only 10% of individuals who are disabled were born with their disability.
Mm. And only 10%. Okay.
Yep. So so the statistics say that at some point in time, we are going to experience a time when we need help. Now, a lot of the ones who need assistance are over 65, and special needs trusts really are not able to be formed for their benefit. And so those stats are highly skewed just because we have a population that continues to grow more elderly all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit skewed, but still the stat is true. Only 10% of those who are disabled were born with their disability.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we have someone that we care for that is in that scenario, we want to make sure that we take appropriate and strategic estate planning measures to ensure their safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what we talked about last week. That's what we want to continue with the discussion today, is what are some of the practical steps we need to be thinking mm-hmm. about? What are some of the things that we need to do to set up a special needs
mm-hmm.
trust?
You talked about the first party trust, the third party trust, and the, was it a pooled trust or pooled assets trust?
A pooled trust. And so all of those, so as a quick review, the first party trust is something that is created when I have money and now I have encountered a disability. The most common one is we didn't do estate planning properly and all of a sudden I have been disabled and I receive an inheritance.
Okay.
I don't want that money because it'll disqualify me because now I have an asset. So it'll cut off my social benefits. Another common scenario is that I'm in a car accident and I was permanently injured. And so therefore I receive an award, a settlement from the insurance company. And now I have assets again, but I need now long-term assistance. So therefore, I want to create a bucket that will supplement my life while allowing me to take advantage of social benefits that are out there, typically housing and health. We can get into a little bit more about that.
Okay.
And then a third party trust is when I create it for somebody else. So a parent creates it specifically and strategically because they are doing estate planning properly. And those types of trust also have very stringent and strict guidelines by which we have to create the trust, but they will work as a supplement to the one who needs assistance.
Mm.
And then a pooled trust is when we actually take that money and we give it to a nonprofit organization and they utilize it and they invest it together with multiple other individuals who are in the same position.
I'd never heard of something like that.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
It is. And it allows for greater investment control. When you invest more, you're able to get more out of those investments. And the nice thing about that is that when the one who needs supplemental care passes away, it can actually stay in the pool and benefit everyone who's already in the pool. Mm-hmm. And so if I put in $100,000, it doesn't mean that I'm limited to that $100,000 anymore. There may be an opportunity for me to receive care for a longer period of time than what my $100,000 could have done in a standalone special needs trust. But again, that's where we get back to, what do you have? What is appropriate? How do we create the bucket and then fund that to ensure that we're going to have money for a long period of time? Mm-hmm. And really funding the special needs trust is a big deal. We need to make sure that if I was going to create a special needs trust for a family member, I need to strategically set aside funds and understand their long-term needs and projections to ensure that there's going to be sufficient money in that bucket. If not, then we have solutions. We can get life insurance around us, and we can have then cash tax-free money go into that bucket and fund or increase the amount that is going to be utilized for the care of that special needs individual. So there's strategies that we can talk about as a whole family unit to make sure that not just the bucket works correctly, not just that the trust is going to work, but there's also money that is going to be strategically designed to fund that to accomplish the long-term goal, which is, how much care do we need? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to care for this individual with the assistance of the government?
Well, talking about government assistance, then give us a reality check on just what is the government going to take care of?
Yeah, it's very, very limited. Mm-hmm. And the way the special needs trust works, on a very simplistic, rudimentary basis, is that if there is a governmental program that will provide aid in some category, then the special needs trust cannot do it. So, for example, anyone who receives public assistance, one of the more common assistance programs that we have is for food. And so if someone is not making very much money, doesn't have many assets, they at any age can go to the government and say, I have nothing and I need assistance. And one of the very first things that we will supply them with is, we want to make sure that you have sufficient food. And so food, shelter is another one. Now, the waiting list to get into governmental assistance housing is like a 5-year wait nowadays. Yeah. I mean, it's just astounding. Of all the conversations in the Pacific Northwest with homeless, of how to correct some of these issues that are going on in our society, this is one segment of a population that is really has no voice, and I don't even hear much about it. It's either that you're on the streets and you get some attention, but we rarely give attention to the housing need, that there are individuals who are impoverished who don't have the ability, whether it's because of education or disabilities or other social issues, who legitimately are not going to be able to work, and yet they're stuck in a rock and a hard spot of not having housing. So housing is another common thing.
I would think that this is, I mean, you don't see a lot of people on the streets who have like Downs or something like that. So take that scenario, a person who has Downs, some kind of severe mental retardation or something, as an adult moving into adulthood. Who's taking care of, we say, put them institutionalized or whatever. What does that mean, and what kind of scenario is that?
Yeah, a lot of times those are issues that we've known about for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And so
this, again, is the 10% or less.
Yes,
small,
they were,
but still
they were born with it. That's right. Mm-hmm. And so when someone is born with their disability, the family structure has been redesigned around that disability even out of the gate.
Okay.
And so there's social benefits, there's social programs, there's support groups. There's a lot of opportunities in society for a family to get assistance when you are born with your disability. It's actually a harder thing to actually develop your disability later in life because it came out of the blue versus someone who has had it as far as being taken care of, right? So oftentimes the one who was born with their disability, because we anticipate and know that there's cord interference throughout that child's life, we're getting guardianships before they turn 18 to make sure that the parents can have permanent guardianships, and then we create successors under that to ensure that someone is always going to have power of attorney. Now, there's a legal guardianship over someone who was born with their disability. And those families are a little more in tune with the system and how it
works. They've seen this coming for a long time.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, the benefits have always been in play for an individual who was born with their disabilities. And so so really, food and housing are the two major categories, plus health. And so those are the three major categories that we can rely upon in society.
The government will help.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But anything else, the government so far hasn't paid for any of my vacations, darn it.
Right.
Right? And so I'm not so sure that that's really fair. I need a vacation. Trust you me. Well, but the government's not going to step in for anyone's vacation. Okay? So therefore, a supplemental trust can actually assist with making sure that the one who utilizes and needs that money is able to take a vacation. And it may be something as simple as getting to the ocean for a couple of days. It may be something more complicated, like actually getting down to California and going to Disneyland. And that supplemental trust can also pay for a companion to go and other things, because that person may need care.
Yeah, sort of the quality of life is going to be dictated by how well-funded this supplemental trust is.
That's right. And so now we're getting back to what I've already stated, which is, what's the long-term goal? Mm-hmm. What is going to be available? What type of finances are going to be available to fund this? And so those things are going to be highly restrictive in a pooled trust. And there may be a very, very strong need to develop an individual trust to ensure that some of those quality of life issues can be added to the beneficiary's life. Mm-hmm. And so things like a lot of disabled individuals greatly benefit from pets and from companionship, but the government is not going to pay for dog food or vet bills, but yet the supplemental trust can. And so it's intended to be very, very flexible, but yet make sure that we're not disqualifying somebody from their food, from their health, or from their housing.
Mm-hmm. Very important discussion this week, the Special Needs Trust, the Supplemental Needs Trust that you want to leave to that loved person in your life. If people need help with this, need more discussion, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website. It's legacyandfaith.com. Podcasts, ways to communicate. We have educational seminars coming up, workshops, and so lots of opportunity to at your fingertips there at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, and going back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant from the Legacy and Faith Show. I want to encourage you to head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. We provide educational seminars designed to give you a starting point for your estate planning needs. We discuss things like, what documents are needed in every estate plan? How do I protect the next generation? What are estate tax issues? And how do I plan for minor or special needs children? Come on over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, and discover a host of information. Sign up for an educational class or ask a question. That's at legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
Planning with Purpose, the law offices of Paul Grant, is accepting applications for a part-time office assistant and is always seeking highly motivated and exceptional attorneys. If you're interested in joining a team that seeks to serve families, then go to legacyandfaith.com and use the website's email option to express your interest.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, interesting discussion this week, the special needs trust, taking care of that person after you're gone who needs some special help because perhaps they were born with special needs, but or maybe, as I found out, that's actually 10% or less. It's most people develop their special needs later in life. How do you take care of that and some considerations?
Yeah, and of course we mentioned that a large portion of that 90%, they're already 65 and older. So the type of trust that we're setting up, you need to be 64 years or younger before we set that up. And so if you are already 65 or older, that is a different system. That's elder care. That's elder law. And we've had other discussions about that specific issue on our podcast series.
Well, did these trusts then expire once you reach 65?
No. No, they don't. They don't. As long as it's established before, then you can continue to utilize it for the rest of your life.
Okay.
But the issue is that as you age, then we don't want you giving away your money just to try to get long-term care and other things. Well, there's ways to do it, but nonetheless, that's not the whole point of a special needs trust.
Okay.
So in this, special needs trusts are specifically designed and strategically designed. And notice how I keep saying that word. We need to be strategic with our estate plan. And that's really what all this comes back down to is how do we ensure not just the safety of the one who needs assistance, but how about the safety of the entire family? So oftentimes we have multiple children and maybe there is one of our children that needs additional assistance. So for whatever reason, they need a special needs trust, whether they were born with their disability, developed it later. But a lot of times the family dynamics then, as I've mentioned before, kind of swirl around the one who needs assistance. And very similar to elder care, which is that if you don't have a plan, then you are automatically having the family plan, which is, I hope the family is going to come in and bail me out.
Right.
And that is not where we want to leave a known individual who needs help.
Particularly, yeah.
And so, unfortunately, this is what happens all too often. 50% of Americans still don't have a will or a trust. They have no disposition document. And I can almost assure you that of those 50%, there are individuals who have disabled children. And so leaving it by chance means that we're going to leave it to the family, to the siblings, to someone else to figure out how to help that person instead of being strategic. And it leaves a lot of pressure on other family members when the patriarch ultimately passes away. And oftentimes, a very rudimentary special needs trust is actually designed to say, let the sibling take care of them with very little guidance and with very, very little contingency plans. Well, as we've mentioned before, what if that sibling passes away? What's the next step? What if that person themselves becomes ill or has health challenges? What if they were encountering just marriage issues and life was a whirlwind for them, right? And so when we rely solely upon family members, what I have ended up seeing is that it adds an enormous amount of stress and anxiety to the other family members that we can alleviate to make sure that we have proper planning and ensure that there are contingencies that if they're unable to perform that function, that they're not stuck with it. 'Cause here's the other problem is that when we've had a sibling that has had special needs and a majority of our life has been spent assisting them, it almost becomes our moral obligation to continue that assistance. And it's very, very difficult for individuals in that mode to take care of themselves. It's very similar to one spouse becoming sick at the end of their life and the healthy spouse doing everything, taking on all the roles, all the responsibilities. I don't have the exact statistics, but I have seen over and over in my career to where the spouse who started healthy actually dies first, because all of the stress and all of the anxiety and all of the care of the other person lands on their shoulders. Mm. And that's not the position that we want to put our family in caring for someone who needs long-term assistance. Mm. So in other words, a special needs child. We need to be strategic in how we do this. Placing a sibling in charge of the money may not even be the right decision. Mm. So we have to start the conversation just in who is able to manage the money for our special needs trust. Mm-hmm. Does the sibling or do other family members have the right financial skills to invest and wisely use it? Or are their spending habits out of control?
Mm.
If their spending habits are out of control, what makes us believe that somehow magically they're going to run a trust for their sibling properly or with greater responsibility? It's just not going to happen.
Well, I can imagine the scenario where, let's say, there was three kids and they all received an inheritance. Their parents are gone. And let's say the two healthy ones are out of money now, and the only one's got any money is the disabled one.
Right. And so did we plan properly?
Yeah, right.
So that goes back to the strategic planning, is that if we're going to maneuver a majority of our wealth or our assets towards the one who has special needs, are we then harming and putting our other children in a disparaged position?
Mm.
And so we need to have the conversation that what happens to the whole family, not just what happens to the one individual that we need to care about. And so it's a whole family conversation. And oftentimes, the other siblings are, at least one of them, they are in a position, they are responsible, and they actually desire to continue assistance.
Sure.
Great. That's a beautiful place to be in. But that's actually not the most common scenario. And so
therefore, what's the most common scenario?
Well, that we have family plans that are ill-designed and they just fall in the lap of everybody.
Right, right.
And everyone's scrambling with their heads cut off like chickens,
right?
Before Sunday dinner. And all of a sudden, the everything was created as a mess. Well, actually, there was no creation.
Right.
And a lot of special needs trusts as well are very outdated. If they're anywhere between 5, 10, or more years old, there are things that need to be updated in those special needs.
Well, what are some of the main things that have changed then in that course of time? What do you mean? Why are they outdated so quickly?
Well, it's not about being outdated so quickly. Every estate plan gets outdated that quickly.
Okay.
So it's nothing about the special needs trust. It's that life continues to change.
Okay.
In the past 5 to 10 years, have our lives changed? And the answer is always absolutely. And so the family dynamics change. What if we leaned upon one child, but now they're having difficulties? Is the special needs trust strong enough to accommodate a change? So it could be a family environment. What if we have more money, or what if we have less money than what we anticipated? How does that change the special needs bucket as far as getting
funded?
So
all of these contingencies then can be built into a well-designed trust.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, and the contingencies of law, of taxes. So there's always new programs coming out. As a matter of fact, in 2016, there was a change in federal law that allowed for a first party trust to even be created by the individual. Before that time, there was a gap in the law. And so if we had money of our own and needed to shift it, there were very limited opportunities. Well, now there's other opportunities to create a first party trust that never existed. Mm. There's new programs coming out. There's the ABLE Act, and it allows for an account to have up to $100,000, and it can even be used to support one of the three main government subsidies, which are food, health, and housing. And it still won't disqualify the individuals. Mm. So there's new tools coming out all the time. Mm. Washington law continues to change and update their statutes, and it's called the WAC, the Washington Administrative Code, where the special needs trust and rules are all laid out. Those are always updated. So when we have an older trust, if we're not having a look and a view to keep that current, we could be handing off a very, very old, antiquated, outdated inflexible document that actually handcuffs our family mm-hmm. when we thought we were doing something great.
I've heard that Washington has a pretty good grasp on these issues compared to some other states. People sometimes want to move to Washington because we have a lot of really good things in place.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of great support groups, good organizations mm-hmm. out there to assist families versus I'm not so sure. I don't fully trust that the Washington state as an entity has everything figured out.
Right.
So I'm not sure I could quite go there. Okay. But yes, there's a lot of support groups and a lot of great opportunities to help the family develop a long-term plan.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm a broken record. All right. I am always about creating a long-term wealth transition strategy for your family. How do we do that? And it is even more critical to protect not just a special needs child, but the family at large, to ensure that everyone is well provided for, to ensure that everyone is emotionally and mentally healthy as we want for all of the kids, not just one child and heavy-handedly taking care of them, not having the full discussion of what everyone else will need.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really where all this starts, is head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's podcasts. There's opportunities to get in contact with us. There's workshops coming up. We need to have the conversation. We need to stop and just simply get together, find out what are your needs, what are your family dynamics, and then let's create a really strong, good plan with strong contingencies for everyone's benefit.
Okay, great stuff this week on the Legacy and Faith Show. If you're intrigued, again, Paul would love to work with you on this. You contact him through legacyandfaith.com. Estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant and the Legacy and Faith Show this week on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.